Hello, Natalie.
Hello.
Oh, is mine loud enough?
Puppy is playing. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
How are you doing, No Name Dog?
I'm so excited for this episode. This is might be the episode.
Wait, I don't remember.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Oh my god, wait. Can we talk about like how we felt about it though? You can go first.
I didn't like the movie.
Really? Wait, yeah. Okay. So tell me, how did you get to this place of like, how did you get to this place of loving this piece okay. of media?
So let me give you a quick rundown. When I was a little child. Oh, wait,
hold up.
What?
What was your week like, Caroline? Oh. How was your week?
Boring. Again, I'm writing my paper on cults. It's due on Friday. I've written 0 pages. It's 18 pages. It needs to be 18 pages.
Oh.
So we're at 0 out of 18.
That's okay. Mine's 5 or 6 pages due on Tuesday, and I'm also at 0.
Nice. Look at us.
We're actually good team. Super good at doing everything.
But I like kind of just want to like talk about like this every I want to talk about this a okay. lot of this.
Okay.
Well, you didn't grow up. Do you guys have this in Korea?
What, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark?
Yeah.
No, but we had the Goosebumps series. Wait, is his squeaking gonna get in it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. That's my puppy squeaking in the background. He's Let's playing because he's squeaking, huh?
Are you having fun? You can't do that right now. No fun right now.
Let it go. Leave it. Leave it. Good boy.
Elevator music. I made my own elevator music.
I think that's good. I think we should keep that for all the future ones.
Okay.
Puppy is busy with greening out. We're mm-hmm. good.
We're focused.
Yes, okay. We are.
So, did you guys have Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark in South Korea?
No, we did not.
Do you feel the need to specify South Korea?
What do you mean?
Or do you call it Korea?
Well, the likelihood that I came from North Korea is much more slim.
You know, there's a YouTuber who's North Korean and she like talks about defecting.
Yeah, the woman who's like all into human rights and civil rights and
probably
who's now in.
I don't know. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, no. I'm aware of her existence. However, I'm not an avid viewer of hers and I would like to be. That would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't have that, but we do have the Goosebumps things.
What is Goosebumps?
Goosebumps is a series of like scary novels for children. They're like young adult like spooky novels, and they're the choose your own adventure ones where like at turning points in the story they say like, if you would go into this scary house, go to page 67.
Oh.
If you wouldn't, then read along, like keep going. So it's like a choose your own adventure and the story ends differently based on the decisions that you make.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really fun.
I mean, I'm sure I know of Goosebumps, but I've never actually read it, I don't think. Well, so when I was just a little girl.
Scared. I never read.
When I was young.
Yes.
My, like, the thing in my family was my dad used to tell us, like, ghost stories to go to bed rather than, like, reading us bedtime stories.
Yeah. Okay. Now I understand where you came from. Okay, I get it. I didn't know that before.
Yeah, it was that's a little, it was a weird thing. So I love ghost stories, and like that's where all of, like that's like where a lot of my, I think, true crime, comes from.
Okay.
And so then when I got old enough to read, I always got like scary books. And so one of my first books that I have right here with me, oh, that was pretty loud. I'm Nick.
Mute that. Okay.
I have the Scary Stories Treasury, which is, for those of you who don't know, there is a book called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is the first book of a trilogy. So this is the collection of all three books with all the stories. It's by Alvin Schwartz. It was literally my favorite book. Excuse me, sir.
Sorry, he's drinking water. He's a thirsty boy.
It's by Alvin Schwartz, and it was in 2019 made into a movie, also called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And it's a collection of short stories that are just like creepy and gross.
Ooh, you're such an intellectual that you have books as sources.
You're what actually can I a say?
Scholar. A gentlewoman
and a
scholar.
One of my other favorite books as a child, this might explain how fucking weird I am.
Oh, good. More than the fact was that called you had ghost stories. Okay.
Death in the Grand Canyon.
Oh, nope. I already
hate and it. Was just a collection of every single death that occurred in the Grand Canyon.
Wait, it's just like a series of just like.
So at the beginning, each chapter is like different types of death. So it's like
what?
Falling, murder, whirlpools. What was wrong with me? Why did no one stop me? They also
Caroline.
Had death. I can't remember if it was Yellowstone or Yosemite. But it was like a similar book. And it was like 600 pages long. And you could, they would like list all the names, but then they would also like tell like the interesting stories. So there's
Caroline,
like a very famous.
So frightening.
Yeah. One of my good friends in high school or middle school who you know. For my birthday, she got me Death in the Grand Canyon, and I got her Death in Yellowstone or Yosemite, and we would switch off.
What? To read about different deaths.
Yeah. What's wrong with me?
Is she doing okay?
I don't know.
Like, where is she?
She seems to be doing okay.
Well, if she's listening, you better fucking, I hope you're okay.
I hope you're doing good, girl. You know who you are.
Yeah, there's a very specific story to tell. I'm sure she knows that it's her.
Yeah, so so we're going to be talking about the movie, but prior to starting that, prior to that happening, Natalie, if you listen to the episode prior to this, you'll know that Natalie just got a puppy, little puppy.
Yes.
And so I chose one of my favorite stories that's about new puppies.
Stop it. No.
Don't worry. A puppy doesn't die.
Okay. There were no puppies in the movie.
No. That's why I'm not, like, we'll start the movie after this. We'll start talking about the actual stuff.
Let it be known that, like many college students in discussion classes, I did not do the reading. I don't know what the reading's about, but we'll see how it goes.
I'll explain
I'll
to you
learn
how the movie
as we
works
discuss.
As we get more into it. Let me just find the pages. I also have a fun
page?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
But I also have a fun synchronicity. This morning,
uh-huh,
I was watching a movie called La Cienega. It's a Argentinian movie. It's really good. You guys should go watch it. But they told the Argentinian version of this story.
Okay. Which is of this story.
Of this exact story that
if there's a dog that gets hurt in it,
Gets hurt. No dog gets hurt in this story. But I was like, wow, this is like a sign that I need to tell. I was thinking about telling you this story. And then all of a sudden, I heard this story and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So this story is from book 3 of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is called...
The third. It's 3 Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
It's interesting the way they did this compiled version. It's almost like they just took 3 printed versions of the book and just bound them together. So like the pages don't go all the way through.
Wait, I don't understand.
It restarts it goes back to page 1 at the beginning of each book.
Oh.
So it's not like they just took the 3.
I see. So you have to go like book something, page something.
Yeah, so I have to go find the first page. So the first, so this is called Scary Stories 3, More Tales to Chill Your Bones, collected from folklore and retold by Alvin Schwartz, not Schwartz.
Well, it definitely did chill my bones. I was afraid.
Good. Well, so this is called Sam's New Pet.
Oh no, I already hate it, Caroline. I'm already so afraid.
Sam stayed with
it.
His grandmother when his parents went to Mexico for their vacation. "We are going to bring you back something nice," his mother told him. "It will be a surprise." Before they came home, Sam's parents looked for something beautiful Sam would like. All they could find was a beautiful sombrero, but it cost too much. That afternoon, while they were eating their lunch in a park, they decided to buy the sombrero after all. Sam's father threw what was left of the sandwiches to some stray dogs, and they walked back to the marketplace. One of the animals followed them. It was a small gray creature with short hair, short legs, and a long tail. Wherever they went,
wait,
it went.
Wait,
listen. Isn't he cute? Sam's mother said. He must be one of those Mexican hairless dogs. Sam would love him. He's probably somebody's pet, Sam's father said. They asked several people if they knew who its owners were, but no one did. They just smiled and shrugged their shoulders. Finally, Sam's mother said, maybe he's just a stray. Let's take him home with us. We can give him a good home, and Sam will love him.
No.
It is against the law to take pets across the border, but Sam's parents hid the animal in a box, and no one saw it. Plus, they're probably American, and Border Patrol doesn't do anything for Americans because they're racist. That's beside the point, not part of the story.
Okay.
When they got home, they showed it to Sam. He's a pretty small dog, said Sam. He's a Mexican dog, his father said. I'm not sure what kind. I think it's called a Mexican hairless. We'll find out. Oh, but isn't he nice?
No,
they gave the new pet some dog food. Then they washed it and brushed it and combed its fur. That night, it slept on Sam's bed. When Sam awakened the next morning, his pet was still there. Mother, he called. The dog has a cold. The animal's eyes were running, and there was something white around its mouth. Later that morning, Sam's mother took it to a veterinarian. Where did you get him? The vet asked. In Mexico, she said. We think it's a Mexican hairless. I was gonna ask you about that. He's not a hairless, the vet said. He's not even a dog. He's a sewer rat, and he has rabies.
Well, I knew he was a rat. Because they said short and gray with short legs.
And this picture that's in this book, for those... Sorry, I want to give shout-outs because I love this book so much. The drawings are by a guy named Stephen Gamel. This picture of the animal, it doesn't even look like a rat, but they drew a picture, and it truly gave me nightmares when I was younger. I'm going to show it to you.
I don't know if I want to see it.
This is what they depict the animal as.
That's a fucking radish with a head. Not a real Caroline.
I'll post that picture on our Instagram as part of the collection.
I feel ill. That's one of the most disgusting stories. I hate it. I hate it so much.
So the Argentinian version was...
Oh my God.
They go to Africa and they bring home this animal.
This is why they have customs. They don't yes. want you to be bringing fucking sewer rats back because you're an imbecile and you think it's a dog.
Well, so the Argentinians, I don't know if it's, it might be just the South American version of this in this Argentinian film okay. was.
Wait, does the story get told in the film or does the story happen in the film?
No. The story just gets told. It's like a bunch of children who scare each other. It's part of the plot. You guys should watch it. It's really good. They bring home this rat from Africa.
Oh my God.
But they don't know it's a rat. Obviously, that's the whole point. They think it's a dog.
Oh, delicious.
And they have a bunch of cats. And the next morning, they wake up and the rat, or the quote unquote, I'm doing little air quotes, dog has eaten all the cats.
Fucking stop it.
So they take it to the vet, and the vet immediately turns and grabs an axe and chops the rat in half.
Good.
Yeah. So congrats on the new dog.
Okay, he's clearly not a rat. Like,
he's not a rat.
He has eyebrows.
Wow, yesterday we were talking about Mexican hairless dogs.
I fucking told you they look like they're inside out dogs. You shouldn't be getting those. It's very frightening, super disorienting.
That was like one of my, here's another thing I thought was going to be a bigger issue in my life. I really thought I was going to...
Rat dogs?
Going to accidentally get a rat when we got a dog.
Oh, gosh. I really hate that. I really, really hate that a lot.
All right. Well, so let's get into this movie. Okay. I really did not like it.
Okay.
I would give it 2 out of 10 ghosts. What did you think of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark?
So I've seen, actually have a whole comment on this.
Go ahead.
So I've seen other Guillermo del Toro films. Like I saw Pan's Labyrinth and it's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I think of him, I think of that kind of artsy movie.
I also adore Guillermo del Toro. And yes. I have a feeling I know where you're going with this. Continue.
And this did not feel exactly, like him at all.
I was like, this is going to be so creepy.
Right. So I went into it with these like relatively high expectations that it was going to be really good. And even if the story is like quintessentially American and isn't that like magical realism story, I was like, he's still going to bring this really fucking scary element to it, the way that Pan's Labyrinth has that. Mm-hmm. Just, it just remains fucked up in your head forever.
This was so though, like, it's not directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Wait, what was his role in it? Why do I associate with him?
He is associated with it. I think he produced it and maybe wrote it.
Oh, okay.
But he didn't like direct it, and that's kind of like, I was with you, I was kind of excited to see, like,
yes,
I love Guillermo del Toro's movies. But then as I was watching it, I was like, this is not him.
Yeah.
And so I looked it up and I was like, oh, what a disappointment. I just didn't have such high expectations for, like, I have such a special place in my heart for Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Uh-huh.
That I really don't think any movie ever could have lived up to. Yeah, what I would want from it.
That's super fair. Like, when you love something, nothing's going to be as expected.
And I also think they didn't include my favorite stories from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So that was also a bit of a...
So, but the other... Okay, wait. Yeah, it was like a letdown.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the other thing that I was a little confused about was they did a thing in the movie where they chose to tell it not necessarily as like a series of stories, but as like... multiple stories entwined in one story, mm-hmm. that then becomes the main story.
Yeah.
And I was under the impression it was an anthology and they're not even related at all.
Yes, exactly.
And I didn't like that they made this like creative decision to write essentially their own story about it. Yeah. And I was like, while I get that might have been cool, it was executed kind of poorly. So I just didn't. I would give it like 7 ghosties out of 10.
So this is... Oh. I give it 2.
2 ghosties.
I'm just like mean. I'm like petty about it. This is
No, that's so fair.
For people who haven't read the book, who haven't seen the movie, this is how pretty much it happens. So the book is a collection of unrelated stories that are based off famous folklore or urban legends. Mm-hmm. Like that first one I just read you, there are a million versions of that story. What do we call it now? Pasta?
Ghost? Creepypasta.
Creepypasta. They're like the OG creepypastas. And they're not at all related. They all have different names, different characters, whatever. But the way they did it in the movie is they pretty much find a book that is a collection of all these stories, or these kids, a group of kids go into a haunted house and find a book that is a collection of all these stories. And if you read those stories... you are cursed by the woman who wrote it.
Yes.
And pretty much each kid experiences their own story that as it's happening is written down in the book.
Yes.
So the book grows. It's kind of like The Ring.
Yeah.
Except like it's new stories are actively happening. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So each person has a new story that is like then written down in the book in like blood. It's
But they also have like a love story in it.
Yeah.
And which was also really a weird decision in my opinion.
I just like don't know why they did that. And this is what my dream of it would be. Trademark, copyright. This is my idea. Please don't steal it. A short Netflix
series.
Where each story has its own episode.
Yes.
Would that not be the most perfect thing in the whole entire world? All directed by Guillermo del Toro. Or you get like really famous. You'll get like Guillermo del Toro to do one. Kind of like Black Mirror.
Yeah, where each episode is a series of like, right.
Jordan Peele to do another.
Like really famous or influential producer/directors in that field. Yes, I love it.
What's the director's name? The Korean director's name? Who did
Parasite? Bong Joon-ho?
Yeah, like he could, oh my God.
Yeah, they should do that.
That's all awesome. I would ever watch for the rest of my entire life. I love that.
And all of them have such a specific take mm-hmm. on the like genre, that it would be so cool to see yeah. how they each interpret
it. Oh my god, I would.
That'd be awesome. So, okay, wait, TM. We're going to do that when we're rich and famous. Oh my god. Guys, can you donate to our Patreon maybe?
So we can make that happen?
We'll make it happen for you if you make that happen for
us. That's my only dream in life.
I have other dreams.
Well, then you're not invited in the project.
That's okay. I don't think I'd be very useful. My other dreams are just I want more dogs.
That's, you can do that and do this.
Really? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe they'll all be rats. So.
What I did, as I mentioned before, the stories that are in the movie are not my favorite stories from the book. So I went a little rogue. Originally, I was like, before I had seen the movie, I was like, oh, I'll just like tell the true version of those stories. But they chose kind of like...
Are there true versions of the stories in the movie?
Those are the stories that like are more like the creepy, ghosty ones that aren't as real.
Okay.
So they don't really have disgusting. Any true stories. They're just urban legends. And, like, you can Google, like, where the urban legend comes from. Right, but it's not, like, anything substantive that's very interesting.
Right.
So, okay. Scary stories
to tell. I have to close the curtains because I'm afraid.
Okay.
You can keep talking, though. I think it'll be quiet.
Okay. So, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark has a mix of, like, creepy stories. Like, the one I read, like, the Sam's dog one. Sam's new pet. So where it's like, it's not a ghost story, it's not a murder, it's just like kind of these creepy stories. So they have those type of stories, but they also have spooky murder urban legends. So I chose my three favorites, and I'm going to read them to you. They're all short, they're all a page and a half.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you where they come from.
Oh my god, I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Okay.
Bubby, are you excited?
So, and they're all pretty famous, so you'll probably recognize them. And they're famous if and they're told...
They're not, like, rat.
No, they're not rat-related. There are a million different versions of them, and you've probably heard most of them before, or some version of them before. I would also say they're all from the first book. So if you don't want to buy... If you want to buy the book, I think... I mean, there's a reason they chose the first book. They chose those stories for the first book because they're the best stories.
Right. They're the most, like, you need to buy the next book.
Yeah. So there are a million different ways to tell these stories. You've probably heard them, one version of them or another. Listen
anyways. I don't care if you've heard them.
Yeah, yeah. But so I'm going to tell you the version from the book. Then I'm going to tell you alternative versions, less of a story and more like a summary of the alternative versions. And then I'm going to tell you the true story that they're based on. Hi.
This could be a two-parter.
It's actually, they're short. They're so short.
I'm so afraid though. Oh, okay. Okay, I'm ready. I'm scared.
So this is called The Hook.
Okay.
Donald and Sarah went to the movies. Then they went for a ride.
His name's Donald.
Okay. Then they went for a ride in Donald's car. They parked up on a hill at the edge of town. From there, they could see the lights up and down the valley. Donald turned on the radio and found some music, but an announcer broke in with a news bulletin. A murderer had escaped from the state prison. He was armed with a knife, and he was headed south on foot. His left hand was missing, and in its place, he wore a hook.
Oh my god.
Let's roll up the windows and lock the doors, said Sarah. That's a good idea, said Donald. The prison isn't too far away, said Sarah. Maybe we really should go home. But it's only 10 o'clock, said Donald. I don't care what time it is.
Donald's trying to get some. Donald doesn't care. Okay.
I don't care what time it is, she said. I want to go home. Look, Sarah, said Donald. He's not going to climb all the way up here. Why would he do that? Even if he did, all the doors are locked. How would he get in? Donald, he could take that hook and break through a window and open a door, she said. I'm scared. I want to go home.
Sarah's me. I just want to go home. I know.
I fucking love Sarah. Donald was annoyed. Girls are always afraid of something happening, he said.
Fuck this guy. Yeah. I hope Donald dies.
I hope Sarah doesn't have sex with Donald ever in her life.
I don't think they're going to make it that far. Okay.
As he started the car, Sarah thought she heard someone or something scratching at her door. Did you hear that? Ew. She asked as they roared away. It sounded like somebody was trying to get in. Oh, sure, said Donald. Soon they got to her house. Would you like to come in and have some cocoa? She asked.
Sarah,
no,
don't do
he
it, girl.
Said. I've got to go home. He went around to the other side of the car to let her out. Hanging on the door handle was a hook.
Disgusting.
Yay! I love that story. Okay, so also I will preface this. If any of you are grown-ups with children or small cousins or nieces or nephews, the whole point of this book is that it's supposed to be like scary stories for children. So they're very rarely super graphic. They're often like near misses.
I see.
So I'm going to tell you the more graphic version of them now.
Wait, can we go back? Donald, what
fucking
you doing, boy?
Sucks.
Well, yeah, he sucks, but also he's like, Sarah, we can't go home. It's 10 p.m. And then she's like, take me home. But she's like, reasonable. She's like, well, you want to hang out in this locked, safe home? And he's like, I gotta go home, Sarah.
Yeah.
Like, what is that?
Fuck Donald. He was trying to get laid and knew he doesn't want cocoa. He wants sex.
I know. I think it's funny that you were saying, like, it's for kids. Because I was like, who offers, like, you don't want to just go have a drink? Like, what is this? He's like, okay, I get it now, though.
And this story.
It's for kids.
In case we haven't mentioned it enough already, we're from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And there are a million of these, like, type of lookout. You know, Mulholland Drive has like a million of these like places that you can turn off and like look out over the city. And there are like a million different versions of these. And I have friends who are like, let's go have a picnic. Let's go look at the city.
Yes.
Fuck all you. Sorry.
In true daylight. In real daylight.
Yeah. I hate that.
But what I will say is, can I tell a story?
Yes.
I don't know if this is a good story.
Go.
So one time when I was a wee little one in high school.
Oh, boy.
Actually, I was always a girl, but I was with a wee little boy who was my friend at the time. I hope to God he's not listening to this because that would be really embarrassing. But he had just learned to drive. He's like just a couple days older than me, but he got his license before me. And he was like, oh, we can just drive up Mulholland, which is like in LA, if you think you're hot shit. You like to drive up Mulholland because you think you're cool.
Because it's a famous street.
Right. It's a famous street. And like Caroline was saying, like there's a bunch of lookouts. And we were like, oh, wait, but we're so cool. We're artsy. And we're going to go to Malibu instead. And we'll drive up one of the canyon roads so we can see the stars because it's far away from the city. And we, mind you, Malibu is not like this Calabasas shit these Kardashians are talking about. Malibu's literally used to be farmland.
It still is.
And it's primarily
off
still
of
farmland.
PCH, if you turn off of PCH, which is the main street of Malibu, yes. It's very
it's not rural. Yeah, well, it's suburban.
But it's very forested, bigger properties, far away from each other.
Yes, they're like estates. So they're rich as fuck, like don't get me wrong. But they're not like these paved, nice, beautiful roads of like very well-manicured lawns. It's like still forest.
Yeah.
These are estates with properties that like are far-reaching California, like California
and
native plants.
If you have a ranch in Los Angeles, it's probably in Malibu.
Yeah, exactly. So these are ranches. These are farms. These are not nice areas.
Safe areas.
They're not like.
But they're not like.
The places that you stop to look off are not like nice. They're not paved. There's no picnic tables. You sit on the ground.
Yeah.
So this friend of mine and I are like, we're going to sit on, like, let's not sit on the hood of our car. That's not cool. Let's sit in the dirt and look at the stars because we're cool.
What?
And I was like, okay, this is cool. We're having fun. I'm into nature, but I don't like nature. Like, I'm genuinely, like, that was a bad word. That was a mix of genuinely and generally. I'm not, like, the kind of person who's good at being, like, in situations where I don't know the outcome. And so when we went to this place, I was, like, already out of my element sitting in this, like, dirt in the middle of nowhere. There's, like, very little cell reception. And we're sitting there, and this person comes up to us.
No.
This person comes up to us. There's multiple cars there. Like, it's not, like, and this person was, like, a teen our age. Obviously any sane person would be, like, oh, I'm not getting murdered. But I thought we were gonna die.
Yes.
He came up to us. And this was before COVID time. So he like literally, I heard him walking over, but I didn't want to turn around because I was afraid that would instantly murder me with his eyes. And then he tapped my shoulder and I thought I was gonna die.
Right behind you.
No, he got right next to us. And he tapped behind me and he was like, or like on my back, and he was like, hey, how long have you guys been sitting here? And I was like, what? What is this? What is happening? And my friend says like, oh, we've been here for like 5 minutes. And he was like, oh, I think you should not sit here anymore. And I was like, wait, are we going to die? Like, what do you mean? And then my head started reeling and I was like, is this gang related? Like, are we on this man's property? Like, this is his like neighborhood or something where I'm not supposed to be or something. And I was just like, my head was spinning. And then he goes, there's fire ants everywhere.
So that's my scary story to tell him there.
He was like, there's fire ants everywhere. And I immediately started screaming and ran back in the car. Anyways, that's the end of my like almost die thing.
I have one. I'm not going to say the street, but there's a street that is like a very deep canyon. It goes all the way up this really deep canyon. You can probably go like 30 minutes. Like, it takes you about 30 minutes to get to the end of it. It's a
pretty long drive, yeah.
It's a pretty long drive. And my two of my friends, one of my friends who lives there and one of my friends who visits LA, we enjoy doing the full drive like at nighttime, and we'll like jam out to music. And we have a really good playlist. Follow me on Spotify. But so we often drive up it. And normally we drive up it. It's in kind of the west side of LA. And if you live on the west side and you're not in Santa Monica, everything pretty much shuts down at like 9 p.m. It's not
even
like,
in Santa Monica.
Even in Santa Monica, they're not open that late. And so we'll usually do it like 10 or 11. And so one time, me and my friends were driving up this street, and we get to the very end of the street, where at the end it's just like a U-turn. It's a like a little cul-de-sac. It actually splits off into two, but both the two streets that you can continue up on are gated.
Right.
So you just do a little cul-de-sac, like a little U-turn in front of the gates, and as we're turning around, a kid runs out into the middle of the street. His hands are, like, in the air. He's, like, waving, trying to wave us down. And I feel so bad. We fucking booked it.
Why do you feel bad? I would have left easily.
We felt, like, the reality is he's probably some kid who got locked out of his house and his phone died. Because
don't care. Yeah. He has neighbors.
I know. Care. I was also, just wait, like,
if he was a kid who got locked out of his house, why would he walk out of his gated community and not just go to one of his neighbors? And in these gated communities, we have friends who live in them. People generally know each other. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been a big deal. He could have gone and sat there.
It was just late. I'm sure he thought we were one of his neighbors or something. I don't know. I don't know the realities. I don't know what it was.
He was a murderer. I'll tell you that. That's the reality.
Started screaming. And I have never driven so quickly down that road. I was like, this is so dangerous. Anyway.
Yeah, that's frightening because he was definitely a murderer.
Don't run towards people in cars at nighttime.
Well, oh yeah, right, because walking slowly is better. Oh. Could you imagine?
Don't approach cars.
Just never even, just try to always have your phone charged.
Either you
don't forget your keys.
If you are walking,
don't be outside after 10 p.m.
If you are walking towards a car, you are a murderer.
Unless it's your
car. Or there's a car. The person in the car is a murderer. There's no, just don't ever, don't, you know.
Don't talk to strangers when it's dark outside.
Yeah.
Ever.
Or on slight outside. Just don't talk to people.
Actually, don't talk to strangers.
Just stay alone.
Period. Just don't make new friends.
Okay.
Stay at home.
So the hook.
That was disgusting.
This is a pretty popular urban legend. There are a number of alternative versions. In one alternative version, the couple are driving through an unknown part of the countryside late at night. They're not familiar with it, and they stop in the middle of the woods, usually it's because the car breaks down or something.
No.
Or the man has to go pee or something like that, so he's like, oh, I'm just gonna hop out and run off to the side. Which is like, if you're in the middle of nowhere at nighttime in the woods,
pee yourself.
Pee out the window.
Pee yourself. Don't open the window. Don't unlock any doors.
Uh-huh.
Pee in your pants.
And while waiting for the man to return, the woman turns on the radio and hears the report. Here's a report of an escaped, usually it's like a mental patient or a prisoner or something. I don't want to say mental patient because that feels, what's the word I'm looking for?
Ableist?
No.
Discriminatory?
Like, yeah, discriminatory towards mental patients because, in case you don't know, those with mental health disorders are more likely to get it, to have violence committed towards them, to commit violence towards others. So I'm going to say an escaped prisoner. And she's like sitting in the car waiting for her man to get back. And she hears like this thumping on the roof of the car.
Bye.
And eventually she's like, okay, I'm just going to get out of the car and see what's happening. And the escaped, oh my God, I hate this one. The escaped prisoner is sitting on the roof banging the man's severed head on the
car. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I thought it was going to be the hook.
I just gave
banging
myself
the hook.
Chills. Banging I know. The hook. That one, I don't understand because like if you look up the hook, they have all these versions of it. But I'm like, that doesn't even have a hook in it.
No. Stop.
Or the other one is they're like parked. Oh my God, I like hate. I'm literally giving myself chills. She's parked. They're parked under like a tree and the guy gets out.
Caroline, I hate it.
The guy's hanging from the tree dead and his fingernails are scraping against the roof.
Please stop. Please, for the love of God, stop. I absolutely hate that. That's disgusting. But at that point, I will say, I kind of think you win. Because theoretically, if the guy's already dead, you could just drive away.
Unless
you're sitting
in a locked
car.
Prisoner is still there. But yes. No, but not if the car's broken down though.
No.
I know. I hate it. I hate
no.
it. I hate it. I hate it.
No.
I hate it.
No.
Or the other version is like the guy comes back and the woman has been murdered, usually with like a hook in her chest or something like that.
No. 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 This is why I would like to ask AAA to sponsor us so that we never have to get out of the car until roadside assistance has arrived and gives you a tow for up to 7 to 100 to 200 miles, depending on your level of membership. But pay for it. I don't care. Don't okay. eat. Just make sure you never get out of the car.
What if the AAA guy is the murderer?
Well, then you've played yourself. I don't know what to say then.
Well, and then the other one that's pretty common is the guy goes away. She's locked in the car. She's freaking out. She's hearing noises. And the police show up. Mm-hmm. And they get her out of the car and they keep telling her, like, don't look back. Just come to the car. Don't look back. Don't look back. And eventually she, like, looks back and the man's, like, body is mutilated or something. Her boyfriend's body
is
mutilated.
Oh, dear God. I hate that. I hate it.
Yeah, I hate it too. Yeah. So it's pretty much just, like, these other horrific versions of these stories. Obviously, the scary stories to tell in the dark version is a little bit more PC.
I like that one. I like the children's version of these stories. I think they're palatable and just spooky enough for me.
So, and it just enough to creep you out.
Do you want to come in for some cocoa? That's my level. I like that.
And you know, you get the message of the story, which is lock your car doors. Don't yes. don't go to lookouts or lovers' lanes.
Pee at home before you leave.
Yeah.
Don't drink for 20 minutes before you get in the car.
So where did this story come from? The origins of the hook legend are pretty unknown. But according to...
This is a real story, Caroline.
Just wait. According to folklorist and historian, which is my dream job, Jan Harald Brunvand. I don't know why I'm assuming...
That was such a good accent, though.
Scandinavian of some sort, but I am going to assume he's Scandinavian. The story began to circulate sometime in the 1950s in the US and became widespread amongst American teenagers by 1959. The first known publication of the story occurred on November 8th, 1960, when a reader wrote into Dear Abby with the story.
What? Oh, no. No, no, no.
Don't. It's not too scary. Dear Abby, oh, sorry, I'm going to read it to you now. Dear Abby, if you are interested in teenagers, you will print this story. I do not know whether it is true or not, but it doesn't matter because it served its purpose for me. A fellow and his date pulled into their favorite lover's lane to listen to the radio and do a little necking.
Stop it. This is too reminiscent of the Zodiac.
The music was interrupted by an announcer who said there is an escaped convict in the area who had served time for rape and robbery. He was described as having a hook instead of a right hand. The couple became frightened and drove away.
Good.
When the boy took his girl home, he went around to open the car door. Then he saw a hook on the door handle. I will never park to make out as long as I live. I hope this does the same for others' kids.
That is so good.
Jeanette.
Jeanette, you're a star.
I love that that's her takeaway. Don't park to make out. Do it while
actually,
you're driving.
Do it while you move. Do it while you're driving. I love that. That is so creepy because it's so classic. Like, that is the way a lot of actual stories, I feel like, go.
Yeah.
I hate that.
But so where did this story come from? To get to the real life reason. So it became popular in the 50s. So we don't know exactly 100% where it came from. But Snopes writer David Mickelson. Mickelson. Well, it's M-I-K-K-E-L-S-O-N. Mikkelson. Sorry.
We don't know.
Has speculated that the legend might have its roots in the real life Lover's Lane murders.
Oh no.
The 1946 Texarkana moonlight murders.
Oh no.
Also known. Do you know what else it's known as? Texarkana?
No.
Anything?
No.
No? Nothing?
No.
Nothing?
No.
The town that was scared of sundown? Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh my god, no!
Yeah.
No.
So these are all connected. There have been approximately 1 bajillion movies that have been based off these murders, and they are still unsolved. So I'm going to give you a quick rundown of the Moonlight Murders in Texarkana. They've been also called the Phantom Killer, Phantom Slayer, blah, 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 blah. So, the mysterious moonlight murders rocked the sleepy southern town of Texarkana in 1946. So Texarkana is on the Texas-Arkansas border, hence Texarkana. Police on either side of the state line struggled to work as one, while the killings themselves possessed the iconic quality of urban legend. Young couples parked at the end of a lonely country road, savage after the sun went down.
Stop parking on those lonely country roads.
So this is all from the lineup. It was really well written and I really liked it. So that's where I got this information from. So pretty much a quick summary before I get more into details. Authorities believed a killer murdered 5 people in 10 weeks. The killer, described by witnesses as wearing a white mask or a sack with holes cut for eyes.
Oh my god.
Was dubbed the Phantom Killer or Phantom Slayer, a name that was very popular. It became super popular in the media. Everyone was talking about this. This was a hugely popular case and of course seemed ready made for the film screen.
Oh my god. No.
Yeah. So, he killed 5, but he attacked more than 5, and a number survived their attacks, much like
the Zodiac.
Ding, ding, ding. Gross. So, the first attack took place on February 22nd, 1946, on a secluded road outside of town. The killer approached Larry?
I think it would be Larry then.
Larry?
No?
Okay, yeah. I'm just calling her Mary Jean, and her boyfriend, Jimmy Hollis. And they were parked in their car, smooching.
Necking. Gross.
He blinded them with his flashlight upon approach and then held them at gunpoint and ordered them out of the vehicle. The killer told Jimmy to remove his pants and proceeded to beat him severely, fracturing his skull.
On the bottom of his body? Oh, everywhere.
I just beat him and told him to take off his pants because he's a crazy person.
Not okay person.
At the same time, he told Mary Jean to run. And she, like, ran in one direction. And then the killer was like, don't go that way. And so she ran in a different direction. And then he chased her down. Oh, this is, like, really upsetting. Raped her with the pistol. Stop
it, Caroline. I don't want to hear that.
And then let her run away again.
Oh, my fucking God.
In spite of the aggressiveness of their attacks and their pretty severe injuries, both survived.
Pretty severe, yeah. Well, deadly.
Yeah. Both survived.
No, I mean, yeah, but also, God.
Yeah, pretty horrific. In March, Richard Griffin and Polly Ann Moore were found dead in their parked car at the end of a secluded road. So the first couple, both of them survived. Second couple, both were found dead. The couple who had only been together for 6 weeks.
What a disgustingly traumatizing incident. No matter how long you've been together. Yeah. But could you imagine going through that with someone you didn't really know?
Well, here's an interesting thing.
Oh, no.
Griffin, age 29, was shot fatally in the back of the head.
Griffin was a man?
Griffin was a man. Okay. Sorry, that's his last name, Richard Griffin.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Polly Ann Moore, aged 17, was also fatally shot in the back of the head.
It's weird that he changed his MO so much that he beat the first ones.
Well, I wonder if he realized, like,
it was too much.
And they could could identify them, so he needed to kill them. And two is, like, there are too many variables, maybe. You know, letting them run away. Or, like, have the... Anyway.
I guess you're right. But either way, I just don't...
A few weeks later, Paul Martin and Betty Jo Booker were also murdered. They had begun dating after a long friendship, and Booker was only 15 years old.
Ew.
No, like, I think Paul was also her age.
Okay, because the first one's 29 and 17.
They had known each other for a while, and they, like, had known each other since kindergarten. They say they had been friends since kindergarten, which makes me think they were in kindergarten together.
Aw.
Okay. Booker had a saxophone performance with her local band, and Martin had come out to support her and pick her up.
Oh, man.
And then five hours later, Martin's body was discovered, but Booker's body was not with him. And was found 6 hours later, laying 2 miles from her boyfriend's.
That is really disgusting sad. And terrible and bad in literally every possible.
Yeah. In the first week of May, so the first killings were end of February. So in the first week of May, mind you, the town is on fucking high alert. This is like...
Duh. Yeah. You know,
this is like Texas, Arkansas country, like middle of nowhere. These people have pretty much makeshift militias set up out hunting the sky. And somehow he is still able to murder people.
How?
In the first week of May, the murderer attacked what are his last official victims, which are a husband and wife in their farmhouse. So Virgil Starks was killed by 2 shots to the back of the head, and his wife, Katie, survived despite being shot twice in the face.
Oh my God, Caroline!
And having to run down the street to get help from a neighbor. Insane. So the suspects, so this guy was never caught. You know, it's 1947, 1946. So we assume he's dead now, but who knows?
He better fucking be.
I hope he's dead. Suspects include a University of Arkansas freshman who committed suicide in 1948.
Oh, right when the killing
right stopped. After.
Okay, got it.
There was also a German POW.
For everyone who doesn't know, that's a prisoner of war.
There was an LA resident. Hi.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, let's definitely be associated with
who
that.
Who believed that this guy, well, I mean, this one's pretty dumb. The LA resident was convinced that he had committed the crimes while he was in a coma.
Wait, what do you mean by while he was in a coma?
He was in a coma and he thought, like, from what I understand, he got up and murdered people while in a coma.
Like he was, like, almost like sleepwalking, but it was like a blackout part of his memory.
But I think he was like in a real coma.
Well, how was he in a
hospital? I don't know if he's, that's the thing. It was unclear whether or not he was in the hospital, but that's what he claimed. However, the most popular suspect was a man named, I should have looked up how to pronounce this.
Okay, go for it.
Yule, Youell. Yule?
Sure.
Swiney, Swiney. Swiney. This was a guy from Texarkana. He was arrested in 1947 for auto theft. And his wife at the time confessed, like, this is what he did this. But by law, she could not testify against him because they're married.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Which I was kind of like, I thought the law was like, you don't need to testify against your husband. I didn't know it was illegal for you to testify.
I think it was in some states for a while.
Probably, especially like a wife against her husband.
Yeah.
She eventually would take back her confession. Luckily, I hope it's this guy, because Swiney remained in prison as a habitual offender until 1973. So he's pretty much in and out of prison until 1973 and then died in 1994. So he spent a lot of time in prison, although not for the murders that he might have committed.
Right.
So that's the story that may have inspired The Hook. Again, no hook. And The Hook is the best part of the story, if you ask me.
Well, I hated every single other story except for the fake one. But that's all right.
So, the next one. This one doesn't have as much information as to the origin, unlike the theoretical Texarkana one. So, this will be like a nice breather in between two relatively horrific murders.
Oh my god.
So, but this is actually the one that scared me the most, and I still think about, like, to this day very actively while I'm driving.
Stop.
I'm sure you think about this too. This is like a very common one.
Uh-oh.
And this one is called, I gotta fucking open my book up so I can read it to you. This one is called High Beams.
Uh-oh.
The girl driving the old blue sedan was a senior at the high school.
Oh, no.
She lived on a farm about 8 miles away and used the car to drive back and forth. Let me adjust my setting. She had driven into town that night to see a basketball game. Now she was on her way home. As she pulled away from the school, she noticed a red pickup truck follow her out of the parking lot. A few minutes later, the truck was still behind her. I guess we're going in the same direction, she thought. She began to watch the truck in the mirror. When she changed her speed, the driver of the truck changed his speed. When she passed a car, so did he. He then turned on his high beams, flooding her car with light. He left them on for almost a minute. He probably wants to pass me, she thought, but she was becoming uneasy. Usually she drove home over a back road. Not too many people went that way. But when she turned onto that road, so did the truck. I've got to get away from him, she thought, and she began to drive faster. He turned his high beams on again. After a minute, he turned them off. Then he turned them on again and off again.
No.
She drove even faster, but the truck driver stayed right behind her. He then turned on his high beams again. Once more, her car was ablaze with light. What is he doing? She thought. What does he want? Then he turned them off again.
No,
but a minute later,
it.
He had turned them on again, and he left them on. At last, she pulled into her driveway, and the truck pulled in right behind her. She jumped from the car and ran into the house.
No, stay in the car! Stay in the car!
Call the police, she screamed at her father. Out in the driveway, she could see the driver of the truck. He had a gun in his hand. When the police arrived, they started to arrest me. But he pointed to the girl's car. You don't want me, you want him. Crouched behind the driver's seat, there was a man with a knife. As the driver of the truck explained it, the man slipped into the girl's car just before she left the school. He saw it happen, but there was no way he could stop it. He thought about getting the police, but he was afraid to leave her, so he followed her in the car. Each time the man in the back seat reached up to overpower her, the driver of the truck turned on his high beams. The man dropped down, afraid that someone might see him.
That man in that truck is too good of a person. The man driving behind her, obviously.
I am terrified. One, every time I get in my car, you check the back seats.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
this is a story that inspired me to do that at a very young age. And I hate when people are following me with their high beams because I'm always like, oh my God, there's someone in my back seat.
Really? Okay, so I'm afraid. So I've heard multiple things about mm-hmm. high beams when they're not necessary. If a car is driving towards you mm-hmm. with its high beams on, it's intentionally blinding you yes. because a drive-by is about to happen.
Yeah.
And then oh, Bubby, please stop scratching. And the other thing that I've heard is that if they're behind you with the high beams, they're trying to hurt you. Like, they themselves are trying to hurt you because you've done something wrong on the road and they have road rage. Ooh. And they're on steroids also. I forgot to mention that.
Okay.
Also on drugs. Multiple different drugs.
I've heard about the drive-by thing, but I've also heard that if they don't have their lights on, that's also a drive-by.
Right. If they don't have any lights on, like no headlights, or if they have high beams on.
Yeah. It's all very stressful. But then we also have in LA, I don't know if this is a nationwide thing. In LA, you flash your brights if you're
trying to pass.
No. Well, whenever I'm mad at someone, I flash my brights.
Why don't you just honk, like tap on the horn?
Because, well, if they continue to do it, it's like usually I'm like, just like go a little bit faster or like move forward slightly so I can make a right hand turn. You know, when you like there's a right hand turn lane that you can't get into.
Yeah,
but people
are stopping. Yeah. Yeah.
So usually it's not something that I'm like, this isn't like horn worthy.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to honk my horn when someone's really angry. So maybe if I just flash my brights, they'll notice that I'm behind them.
I see.
But in LA, what I was taught is if you're driving one direction and you see a car or a cop car, you flash your brights after you pass a cop car. So oncoming cars know to slow down.
I never heard that.
Well, it might be an LA thing specifically.
Because there's always CHP. Yeah. Everyone's trying to murder each other.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is frightening. Either way, I don't like that story.
Mm-hmm.
That one I had heard before as a child.
Yeah.
Well, and there are some also other after watching
that you might have heard.
Well, I've heard a lot of ones, but the premise of the story is always there's someone in her car that she doesn't know about.
In the backseat. Yeah.
Right. But the thing that I didn't know from that story was that, like, she gets out of the car. In the stories that I was told, she always dies.
Oh, which is why
that story plus Criminal Minds episodes. I'm immediately.
I don't want to drive home now.
Oh no! Text me when you can call me the whole way home just in case. But
frightening. But I've actually, the main ones I've heard, she doesn't die, which is interesting. So the other version that's very popular for this type of story is the woman stops for gas. And as she's like filling up her stuff, her gas tank,
uh-huh.
the attendant is like, hey, come inside. Something's wrong with your credit card. Something's wrong with that gas tank. Come inside. And when she comes inside, the guy's like, someone got into the back of your car while
disgusting.
You were filling up your gas tank. So disgusting. It's always like, that's why you're always supposed to lock your car.
Mm-hmm.
This is my, this is the major flaw in my car. In my car, to open the gas tank,
mm-hmm.
if the car is locked, you can't open the gas tank.
Oh.
You know how usually there's like a button you press underneath the steering wheel?
Yeah, that's my car.
In my car, it's just like, oh no, you just press against the...
Like it taps out or something?
Yeah, it taps out. But it needs to be unlocked to do that. And I was like, ah, fuck me. I fucking played myself.
No.
Yeah. So that's not fun. And then there's the other classic one, another Zodiac-inspired one where they're like, oh, something's wrong with you. You someone's flashing their brights behind you, so you pull over and they're like, oh, something's wrong with your car, let me help you.
No.
And then they murder you.
Oh no. And they break your car instead of fixing it. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me the real guys.
So this one is not as there's not a ton of detail to the mm-hmm. backstory, but there is a So the story has been identified as circulating as early as the late 1960s. So prior to, I think it's so interesting how, like, it almost seems like some serial killers were inspired that by these stories. You know?
Oh, that's depressing to think about.
But gained widespread recognition after appearing in a letter to an advice columnist, Ann Landers, in 1982. So it's kind of like, it's so interesting. That, like, must be where, you know how on Instagram you see those things are like, read this story, it'll save your life or save your friend's life. Advice columnists were the OGs, OG versions of that. So folklorists believe it may have been inspired by a vaguely similar real event in 1964 in which a New York City policeman found an escaped murderer hiding in the back seat of his cop car.
His own car?
His own cop car.
What kind of foolish murderer starts with a cop car? Well,
and I wonder if he was a detective and
like a plainclothes detective?
An unmarked vehicle.
Yeah, but those are pretty easy to see anyways.
But maybe not in the 60s when you're dumb. I'm sorry, I just assume everyone in the 60s.
Really, I feel like everyone in the 60s was smarter than us because how the fuck did they survive? Like, it sounds so hard.
Some didn't. And then supposedly. Some didn't. Well, this guy didn't. The cop shot the guy good. In the back of the seat.
I mean, I guess not good because that could have been a miscommunication. But still.
But he was hot. It does say he was hiding in the back seat of the car.
I know. But the thing is, like, if I was really afraid, the first car I would go into and hide in, cop car. You know what I mean? Like, if someone's pursuing you. And you're like, okay, I'm a normal person. I was mugged. And this criminal is now pursuing me. Or like you're the victim of some crime and you're trying to flee the crime scene. And like something terrible is about to happen if you don't hide away. What car would you pick to hide in? Obviously a cop car if it's there.
Maybe.
If you're like an innocent civilian.
But I want to get into a cop car that has cops in it.
Oh, me too. But what if you have no other
option? In case you couldn't tell. I am white and Natalie is Asian.
Yeah.
So that is why we have confidence getting into a cop
car.
That's
true. It's definitely like racial privilege. But I do think that like in the best instances, cops are intended to be protectors of the law. They're supposed to be protectors of civilians. And while I recognize that definitely doesn't always happen, and I hope that this detective had this criminal identify himself as a murderer before he shot
Who
him.
Who are you? Oh, I'm just a convicted murderer.
Like, I can understand how wires get crossed. Yeah. But, like...
That does seem a bit risky.
You know what
but
I mean?
It does...
That's just, like, that could go so wrong so quickly. Yes. Everything can go wrong quickly,
But he
though.
Does seem correct in identifying him as... And, well, in some articles didn't specify that... He was shot. I just saw one article that did.
Yeah.
Of course, though, let's not assume that real life evildoers have not ever done this because, of course, now we know they have. The question is, were they inspired by the urban legend or did they inspire the urban legend?
True.
Considering the date on this story, we can assume this guy was inspired by an urban legend. As reported in the Decanter Daily News, on September 14th, 2007, a female college student in Alabama was threatened by a man with a gun who popped up suddenly in the back seat of her SUV. However, here's your escape plan. She slammed on her brakes, which knocked the guy off balance and bolted from the car. So this is actually what I have heard because I was surprised when you said don't get out of the car.
Why?
Because you don't want to be stuck in a confined space. I've always heard if you are being about to be murdered or attacked, if you can get away. I mean, obviously, like your instincts should kick in and you should recognize like some escape options are better than others.
Sure.
But I've always been told, especially if they have a gun, because most people are not a great shot. Just run.
Run and zigzag. Yeah. Yeah. Run, zigzags, and tend towards the left. But what I've also been told is in a situation specifically when you're in a car with someone, you should do what the girl did. You should unlock your doors and just abruptly slam and hope that the person behind you rear ends you.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of the car then, but yeah. Do not drive home. Park That's in your driveway and then run out of the car, because the likelihood is someone can stab you before you've exited the vehicle if you're just parking in your driveway.
I guess that's valid. Well, the other one I saw in Criminal Minds, crash your car if someone's in your car.
Yeah, but then what if you die?
Crash it on the other side. Doesn't matter. That's what happens in Criminal Minds and it works.
It's kind of smart.
The last story I'm going to read to you guys
is going to be just as disgusting and terrifying because you said it was.
Yeah. It's quite upsetting. I told you, I got a Halloween episode for you guys. Spooky stories to tell, scary stories.
Yeah, it's extremely upsetting. I think we should add an extra, like, this was really upsetting you guys. Yeah.
This one is an extremely famous one.
Okay.
Even more famous, I would say, than the other two.
Really? Because I definitely knew the other two.
Well, so this one
super surprised.
Called The Babysitter.
Oh, no. I have a strong feeling I'm going to hate this one.
It was 9 o'clock in the evening. Everybody was sitting on the couch in front of the TV. There was Richard, Brian, Jenny, and Doreen, the babysitter. The telephone rang. Maybe it's your mother, said Doreen. She picked up the phone before she could say a word, though. A man laughed hysterically and hung up. Who was that?
Asked what the Richard. Actual flaming fuck?
Who was that? Asked Richard. Some nut, said Doreen. What did I miss? At 9:30, the telephone rang again. Doreen answered it. It was the man who had called her before. I'll be there soon, he said. And he laughed and hung up.
Fuck no. Fuck no. Absolutely not. Nope. I hate
who
it.
Who was it? The children asked. Some crazy person.
Satan.
Said.
It was Satan.
At about 10 o'clock, the telephone rang again. Jenny got to it first. Hello, she said. It was the same man. One more hour, he said, and he laughed and hung up. He said one more hour. What did he mean? Asked Jenny. Don't worry about it, said Doreen.
Oh, Jenny.
It's somebody fooling around.
Oh, I'm Jenny, scared, you fool.
Said Jenny. Good. You should be Jenny. Sorry.
Jenny's the only that one who has her head on straight. I take it back.
At about 10:30, the telephone rang once more. When Doreen picked it up, the man said, pretty soon now, and he laughed. Why are you doing this? Doreen screamed, and he hung up. Was it that guy again? Asked Brian. Yes, said Doreen. I'm going to call the operator and complain. The operator told her to call back if it happened again, and she would try to trace the call. At 11 o'clock, the telephone rang again. Doreen answered. Very soon now, the man said, and he laughed and hung up. Doreen called the operator. Almost at once, she called back. The person was calling from a telephone upstairs. You better leave. I'll get the police. Just then, the door upstairs opened. A man they had never seen before started down the stairs towards them. As they ran from the house, he was smiling in a very strange way. A few minutes later, the police found him and arrested him.
What the fuck? Wait, I love this stories in the dark because they always end with the police found him and they arrested him and everyone walked away safely, although emotionally traumatized. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm really afraid for what stories you're going to tell me as the true inspiration for this because I have a feeling I'm going to hate them.
Yeah. Well... You are.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Well, so some of the more spooky variants of the story usually are the baby, she keeps getting these calls, the babysitter goes up, he says at some point, go check on the children or something like that.
Yeah, because they're all asleep. That's the one I've heard too.
And they go upstairs and check on the children and all the children are dead. For those of you guys who haven't watched When a Stranger Calls.
No, and I'm never watching it. I already know what happens, and I already know that I don't like it.
So When a Stranger Calls.
You hang up and you immediately call the police.
Exactly. Thank you. When a Stranger Calls is a pretty famous horror movie. It's been remade mm-hmm. a couple of times. Mm-hmm. As a young child who was terrified by the babysitter's story, I watched all the versions of it.
Oh my God, Caroline.
And that's why I don't babysit people. Because fuck being in someone else's house. I guess it was only remade twice. There's a 1979 version and a 2006 version. And I don't fuck with either of them. But, again, this story didn't come from nowhere. And the truth is even more horrifying.
No, why is it always more horrifying? Because why can't then it be less horrifying?
It wouldn't be the same. So there's a number of titles given to this story. Usually it's called like The Babysitter or The Call Coming Inside the House or The Babysitter and the Man Upstairs. All of them are just disgusting. But this story is inspired by a murder that happened in the town of Columbia, Missouri in March 1950. Here we go. Janet Christman was an eighth grader in Missouri and had decided to skip a party with her classmates to babysit for a local family.
Oh no, named why is she Romax. Such a good kid too?
Yeah, she's trying to get that money. That's a business focused.
That's a hustler. Right
that's there. A hustler, yeah. The 3-year-old boy she was babysitting for was already asleep when she arrived, so it seemed like it was going to be an easy night for her. Reports at night say in Columbia, the temperature was below freezing and it was raining and sleeting outside. Little is known about what really went down in that house. But what we do know is Janet Christman was raped and strangled to death with an iron cord. The killer was likely someone she knew. Janet had tried to call the police, but all they heard on the other end was the desperate screams of someone telling them to come quickly.
Oh my God.
But police were unable to trace the call. Soon after Janet called the police, Mrs. Romack tried to call to check in on the kids. She received a busy signal, meaning that the phone was off the hook. She thought little of it. It was only when the Romacks came home that they realized that the phone was still off the hook and Janet's dead body lay nearby.
Oh my God.
So, the Romacks found Janet's body in their living room at 1:30 a.m. when they came home. There were signs of violent struggle, but thankfully their 3-year-old son was safe and he had slept through the whole ordeal. Local police questioned dozens of men. The most likely suspect was Robert Mueller, a friend of the Romacks. And Mr. Romack had testified that Mueller, aged 27, speaking about the 13-year-old Janet, Mueller had said that Janet was well-developed. Mrs. Romack also said that Mueller had run his hand across her dress 2 days before the murder.
Oh, God.
He was also known to carry around a mechanical pencil that matched puncture wounds that the police found on Janet's body. However, the police were never able to convict him because they seemed to have bungled the case. Like, they seemed to have fucked up the investigation.
Oh, God.
And he was never charged with the murder. And to this day, the case remains unsolved.
Nope, that's not the kind of case you want unsolved.
Not a 13-year-old girl's murder.
No.
So unlike the urban legend, there's no evidence that Janet's killer ever placed any calls to the Romax house. So like that, we don't know exactly where that comes from.
Right.
There's also something like kind of weird about this urban legend that usually there's some sort of takeaway. Yeah. That you're supposed to get from these urban legends. Oh, like a like safety lock your thing. Car. Yeah. Be like check your back seat. Yeah.
Don't park to make out.
Yeah, don't park in the middle of nowhere. There's less of a like
there's no like
lesson that comes from this, yeah, other than what, like, don't let murderers inside your house.
There's
don't
no moral babysit people for the story.
So yeah, this is kind of a weird one. And there are so many different versions of it. It's just like the fucking worst. Everything about this is the fucking worst.
I hate that.
So those are my three favorite stories from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
They were all pretty bad stories.
All pretty awful. I would like none of them to happen to me. And I am scared to drive home tonight.
I have to walk my dog.
Don't go alone.
I won't because I'm terrified now.
Good. You may have run. I may have just saved your life tonight.
Yeah. God, that's so frightening.
Yeah.
That is so not okay. I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
Okay.
All right, let's do some.
Happy Halloween, weenies.
I know. Happy belated Halloween. We miss it too. We all miss it.
I don't, because in my mind, it's still Halloween.
It's still Halloween for us because we
my
are
my whole life is actually Halloween.
Prior to Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween is this coming Saturday. And Caroline's going to come
with me. I'm also a big believer, though, that as long as the trees are orange, it's still spooky season.
So it's never spooky season in LA.
Yeah, but the trees sometimes get orange here.
There are very few coniferous trees here.
My trees get naked, but before they get naked, they turn slightly orange.
I love
that. Or like brown, I guess, is a better word.
That's not as cute.
But once they go from very alive to fully naked.
Fully naked.
That period in between, you're going to sit right against the window right now.
I'm going to get stabbed.
What if someone breaks the window and strangles you?
Luckily, I have a curtain. So
so they can't get through the curtain.
So they can't. They won't be able to see me.
Here, I'm going to post a picture of Natalie right now. This is her recording.
Wait, not of my, on the actual podcast Instagram?
Yeah.
No.
Natalie's setup right now is the most dangerous setup in the whole entire world. And I can't believe she's sitting like that after I told her those stories.
Well, those stories are all about cars.
I guess that's true.
Okay, for this Halloween, we're going to make it car
themed.
Not
the babysitter one.
Well, but there's no takeaway from that one. There's no moral. That moral is just be a bad person. Go to your eighth grade party. Don't go babysit. Don't hustle. Be selfish. Good. Take some alone time, baby. You know,
maybe some
work-life balance.
Is that the best moral of them all?
To go to the party? Always go to the party.
Always go to the party. And don't leave the party alone.
Always go to the party and have a buddy.
Yeah, buddy system. Yeah. That's not... Did you... Oh my God, sorry. Daily Mail. We're Daily Mail readers.
It's kind of embarrassing to admit, but yeah, we are.
Did you see that Daily Mail story of the girl in England who, for her like 20th birthday, went out with one of her good friends?
No.
And he ended up murdering her on the walk back.
No!
So, not to be gendered, I guess you just don't know anyone. You're going to get murdered no matter what. You can't do anything to stop it.
Yeah, wait. So, okay. I was telling my boyfriend, my partner, about these signs inside of women's restrooms at different establishments. Some, like, restaurants, bars, and clubs that I've actually personally seen some of and that I've also seen getting really popular on social media, which is signs that say like different drinks you can order that you tell the bartender, which associate with different levels of fear / discomfort with whoever you may be at that establishment.
I saw those too.
Right. So.
So it's like if you order a.
Like an angel shot or like a red shot or something, like just be like, can I get the house special but with bourbon or something? Or like, can I get the house special but with whiskey, each alcohol?
And the bartender will, it's like certain shots. And then when you order it, the bartender is like, oh, that person's in trouble or that person needs help.
Right. So if you're uncomfortable, for example, if you're on like an online date and you're meeting someone for the first time and they seem incredibly dangerous, you excuse yourself to go to the restroom. But like if you're there, you can't call someone. Maybe there's no reception. Maybe like you're uncomfortable. You tell your bartender and they'll either like walk you to your car or they'll like call the police for you or whatever it may be, whatever you may need. Like, it's the establishment's way of providing you with that because, you know, they know that people are going to be doing these things. And like, while most of the time they go well, a lot of the times they can go super haywire.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, sir. Sir.
He's thirsty.
Aren't we all? Go up to, if you're going on a date, on like a Tinder date or something in public at a bar or something, tell your bartender.
For sure.
Get there early, tell the bartender.
For sure.
Especially if they don't have those coded drinks.
Yeah.
They're pretty good at that usually.
Yeah.
Even if they're not trained, most people know how to handle that type of shit. Because you know how to handle assholes.
Yeah. And a lot of times, I hope the majority of the time, the thing that you'll most frequently observe is people getting too drunk and then become like super belligerent and really annoying.
Yeah.
But not necessarily threatening. It's just like, God, you're so annoying. Get the fuck away from me. But not as if you're physically threatened or like being manipulated in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Bad vibes, good vibes. Guess we should go live in Scotland. Let's go live in the land of the unicorn.
Fucking, you know, and they also don't have the pink tax in Scotland. They banned that.
I love that.
Hi. Love you, Scotland. I'll be back to you soon.
That you're going to Copenhagen.
Copenhagen.
I don't know how to say it, but I have a friend who's Turkish. Shout out to you, Denise.
I know Denise.
No. Denis. She goes by D. She's from my school, my college. Oh. But she's really, really, like, worldly and cool and stuff. And she says Copenhagen just in the most lyrical, beautiful way. It's insane.
Well, because I'm pretty sure I was on Instagram, of course, stalking food Instagrams for Copenhagen.
Of course.
And it looked like, I don't know, I don't know Scandinavian alphabets.
Sure.
But if I had to assign sounds to those letters, I would call it Copenhagen.
But they say like, they skip the pen. They do like Copenhagen. It's really cool sounding and I can't do it. So Scandinavian languages and Portuguese have very distinct sounds that if you don't make them growing up, I don't know how to make my mouth make that sound. Like the O sound in Portuguese, I just sound like someone might be pinching me as I say it. It's so bad.
We have to take a Danish class when we're in.
That's so cool. Like the quarter abroad things.
Yeah.
Love that. Wait, say it again.
Oh, that was in Spanish.
Okay.
I was like, that doesn't seem right. So we have to take Danish.
I love that.
Oh, here we go.
Copenhagen. That's what I mean. It's like it blends the...
Copenhagen. Copenhagen. It's spelled K O with a line through it. B E N H A V N.
Yeah, so the consonants can be next to each other.
Copenhagen.
That so the sounds V's nothing like you. That.
Yeah, it's like the O of Portuguese.
Well,
I can't
and so we were looking
it.
Up. They said they had 27 vowel pronunciations.
That's a lot. That's as many consonants as... That's as many letters as we have.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's so difficult for Americans to learn. Well, because I had heard that, like, Norwegian's actually pretty easy for Americans to learn.
Interesting.
I think grammatically, because they don't have, like, some weird... They, like, don't do all the tenses.
Oh, they don't conjugate or something?
Yeah. It's, like, the same thing with Chinese.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, in German... For example, because they're all semi-Germanic languages, not Chinese, sorry. Norwegian.
Except Chinese, yeah, sure.
and English. Like in Norwegian, they have more tenses, so it's more confusing for Americans.
Interesting.
But, I mean, that's the hard part for me with Spanish. I just don't know how to do tenses for the most part. I can't talk about the past in Spanish. I only can talk about the future.
Well, there's preterite. The present and the future. There's imperfect.
I don't talk about... I'll just talk about...
How would you say, like, I would have done that?
I wouldn't say that.
Oh. What would you say then?
I would just say something differently. I either wouldn't bring it up at all. I wouldn't bring it up, or I would have to find another way to say it.
That is so funny.
I can't. It's too complicated for me. I'm like, you want me to conjugate this in my brain right now in the middle of a sentence?
I think that when you become fluent in a language, it's not an active thought of conjugation. Yeah. It's just what sounds right. Yeah. You know, and then you say it and then it's...
Yeah, I got to get better at Spanish. But at this point in my Spanish career, which is pretty far in my Spanish career now. I'm just given... I've given up on subjunctive. Okay. I'm like, you'll understand what I'm trying to say even if I don't say it.
You know what you should do is the, like, Latin American TV shows don't do it, but the Spanish speaking, like, Spanish TV shows do it a lot, is they use a subjunctive. But they don't use the preterite. As far as my experience goes, I could definitely be incorrect or I could be flipping it. But
I was told that preterite isn't commonly used at ever. All.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the they only times I've heard preterite being used, wait, I'm lying, in the Spanish TV shows, not in the Latin American TV shows / movies that I've watched, they use the preterite, albeit infrequently, but more frequently than the Latin American TV shows.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't... I just only talk about the present or the future. Those are the only guys I can remember.
That's fair. You gotta look right... You gotta live in the moment.
Yeah.
You gotta live in the moment. You don't need to talk about the past. Who fucking needs the future either?
There's like a thing. My mom told me this, so I don't know if it's true. Sometimes my mom makes up stuff.
Okay.
In Norway and... in Norwegian and Cantonese, I believe, they don't use some sort of future tense, or they do, or they don't. It's something like they don't use some specific tense, and on average, they have fewer debts and save more money. And some linguists. Attribute it to the fact that they don't talk about time in the same way that other languages talk about time.
That's very interesting.
Right? I'm going to Google that and see if I totally made that up.
Or if your mom made it
up. My mom lied to me. Elevator music. Ba-doop, 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 ba-doop. Okay. Sorry. I just found it. My mom's an NPR person. That's all she listens to. So Keith Chen, a professor of economics at UCL, has been studying how the language we use and the way the language is structured can influence our eating habits, our likelihood of smoking, and even the way we spend our money. Broken down, what it really comes down to is that languages differ to the degree they force you, when you speak to them, to pay attention to the difference between the future and the present. In English, we have past tense, I ran. We have present progressive, I am running. But we don't have a future form, rin. There's no future of run.
Oh, you have to say I will run.
Yeah, but we do have, it's called a necessary obligatory form. We do have a kind, oh, sorry, I'm just going to read what he said. But we do have a kind of necessary obligatory form, we will run. I can't, like, so he's saying, like, tomorrow we can't say.
I rin.
It's going to rain. Like, it rain. Like, tomorrow you have to say it will rain.
Right. It's obligatory in that it's a requirement for what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. That's so interesting.
So there are many languages on the planet which are effectively futureless. So languages like Finnish. In languages like Mandarin and Chinese. Okay. Is there a Chinese language? That's not... Okay. Where you would literally say something like, it rained tomorrow. The critical difference here is whether when you're speaking a particular language, it forces you every time you're thinking about a future event to note in your head and to speak as if the future is something viscerally and grammatically different than the present. What this means for our habits is when you speak a futureless language, they talk about future events as if they're present. If your grandma nope, not grandmother. If your grammar puts the future and present on equal footing, it appears your decision making will put future and present on equal footing as well. That kind of subtle distinction, his research shows, appears to have a kind of psychological effect. Countries whose languages grammatically associate the future and present save almost 5% more of their GDP per year.
That's interesting. What about Spain?
And that's over great swaths of time.
Well, the end of this podcast, we get into such weird stuff.
I know. Pretty interesting. If you guys are interested in that, go look up Professor Chet, Keith Chen.
So did you say he's at UCLA or UCL?
UCLA.
Interesting.
Oh, wouldn't that be so much cooler if you're at UCL?
That would be cool. But it wouldn't be NPR then. It would be IPR. Jokes. National Public Radio Imperial. Versus international.
I thought you were going to say Imperial Public Radio.
No, I meant international.
Oh. I was trying to figure out the I stood for. I was still wrong. Okay, well, if you grammatically associate the future and the present, you should probably review our podcast.
And you should definitely use those savings to donate to our Patreon.
So rate and review our podcast, donate to our Patreon. It's Film Noir on Patreon. It's linked in our Instagram bio. Instagram bio. You can find our Instagram bio on our Instagram page.
Yep. And our Instagram page is at
filmnoir.podcast.
And our email is filmnoirpodcast@gmail.com. And something about Twitter.
Oh, guys, please give me followers on Twitter. I have no followers and it's so sad. Even though people like my posts.
And in the future, send us requests of movies you'd like us to do. Have a nice night. Please don't listen to this at night. It was really not. I know they say to tell it in the dark, but do it in the dark in your closet and then come outside and then be in broad daylight so that you're not terribly afraid for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Good idea.
All right. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.